We are continuing our journey through the life of Jesus, and today we're going to tell another parable. If you were with us last Sunday, you heard Jake Cadwell was here. He gave us one of the parables of Jesus, and we're going to give another parable today. And just like last Sunday, today's parable is about farming. Jesus tells a lot of farming stories because there's a lot of farmers in Jesus' day, right? In other words, telling stories. You know what a parable is? A parable is a story based upon something from someone's everyday life that they can understand, and a story from that scenario that you can apply to, you know, a greater truth, an illustration or an analogy. And Jesus told parables that oftentimes from things people understood, so he told a lot of farming stories. We've seen three of them, well, counting today. 2 months ago, we saw one. Last week, we saw one. And today, we'll see another farming story because people could understand those. If Jesus was telling stories today, he might tell stories about our PS4 and how that game fits into real life or something we would understand better, right? A Netflix parable or something, I don't know. But in those days, he was telling farming parables because people could connect with those. Now, here's the deal. Today's parable is different because even though these farming analogies are all from the same idea, they all go different directions. And last week's was a very famous parable. I would say that today's parable is oftentimes an overlooked one. But if I could be very transparent, it's one of my favorite ones. I hope you'll see why in a minute here. Matthew 13, 24. Let's jump right in. Here is another story that Jesus told. The kingdom of heaven is like a farmer who planted good seed in his field. Planted good seed in his field. I got a little sounds going. My mic might be going bad here. We'll see. If I need it, let's wait in case I need it. You can get ready for it, but I'm going to try and make this one work, Marty, okay? Now, unlike last week's story, I want you to notice last week's farming story, the farmer was throwing seed everywhere he went. He threw seed, liberally spreading everywhere on all different kinds of soil. This is a different parable. In this story, the farmer has a particular field. He has prepared this piece of ground. He's cultivated it. It's tilled up. It's good soil. And he puts good seed in his good soil, and it's going to bring a good harvest. The story continues, verse 25. But that night, as the workers slept, his enemy came and planted weeds among the wheat and then slipped away. So somehow in the middle of that night, an enemy comes by just to cause trouble. He throws a bunch of junk in the field, a bunch of weeds, because he knows that they'll get down in the soil where the wheat is at, and the weeds will grow along with the wheat. And he's trying to cause trouble. He knows that junk's going to make the field uglier and a little more chaotic. It's going to steal some nutrients from the soil. He's just causing trouble because he's an enemy. Well, of course, the problem with that is you don't see what he did right away, because those weeds are going to get down in the soil just like the wheat. And nothing grows above the surface very quickly. Usually things go under the surface and get some deep roots if they're in good soil. And by the time they show above the surface, they've been there for a while. And sure enough, in verse number 26, it says, when the crop began to grow and produce grain, well, the weeds also grew. It says in verse 27 that the farmer's workers went to him and said, Sir, the field where you planted the good seed is full of weeds. Like, where did they come from? I thought we did a good job here, man. Thought we had a good thing going. These weeds, what happened? An enemy has done this, the farmer exclaimed. The farmer's not happy about it, but he knows what happened. An enemy did this. And so then the workers ask a question. The workers ask, should we pull out the weeds? And I think that every person who was listening to Jesus tell that story would have sat back and gasped at that question. They would have covered their mouths and sat back and said, no. Like everyone then, they're farmers. They're leaning into the story. Everyone who heard the story would be like, I'd be so mad if someone put a bunch of bad stuff in the soil that I was raising a good crop and put those weeds. They'd be mad. And when they heard the workers ask the farmer, should we go pull out the weeds? Everyone in the audience would be like gasping. And sure enough, the farmer answers. Verse 29, no, he replied, no. You'll uproot the wheat if you do. And again, everyone in Jesus' audience is like, yes, thank you. You don't go out there and pull out those weeds. You're going to yank up the wheat that's there too. You're going to uproot that. It's going to damage the crop. Thank you. At least the farmer is sensible. He needs to educate these workers or get some new ones or something, because that would have been disastrous. But you can't blame them. They're upset. Those weeds shouldn't be there. But the farmer's like, no, no, no. Leave it alone. You'll cause harm to the wheat if you rip up those weeds. And then he says this, verse 30, let both grow together, both the weeds and the wheat, grow together until the harvest. Then I will tell the harvesters, that's a different group, the harvesters, to sort out the weeds, to tie them into bundles and burn them, and to put the wheat into the barn. The wheat we can sell, make money with. The wheat we can eat, we can live off, but we'll deal with the weeds at harvest time, not sooner. Now that's the end of Jesus' parable, and when he finishes telling it, he proceeds to tell a couple more parables. And we won't read those because we already read them. In fact, we told them 2 months ago. We had like a whole Sunday full of short parables. So skipping the next few parables, Jesus wraps up his teaching day. And he goes into the house to grab some dinner with his disciples and maybe settle down for the evening. And we pick up the story in verse 36. It says, then leaving the crowds outside, Jesus went into the house. His disciples said, please explain to us the story of the weeds in the field. They're like all curious. Now, he told a lot of stories, but that's the one that they were locked into. They're like, man, you know, we want the extended cut edition of that parable. Like, there's more to that story. What happened? What did that mean, Jesus? So Jesus is going to explain that parable in more detail to his disciples. He says in verse 37, Jesus replied, the Son of Man is the farmer who plants the good seed. Now, don't miss that now. In this parable, who's the farmer? Jesus. In this parable, Jesus is the farmer, and it's his field. He is intentional about it. He cares about it. He cares about his field, which would imply, without saying, because it doesn't say here, would imply that the workers in the story, the workers would be his followers, his disciples. Remember how we saw a few weeks ago that Jesus sent his disciples out village by village to do the same thing he was doing? And then, of course, they passed that on after he left through the Great Commission all the way down through time to us. So those who were following Jesus, his disciples in that day, you and me today, we are the workers in the story. And Jesus is the farmer according to Jesus. This is his own story. Then he says this in verse 38. He says, The field is the world, the whole world. And the good seed represents the people of the kingdom, the people who have, as we saw last week, received the message of God and have embraced it and have let it bear fruit in their lives. They have, accepting is more than just hearing, it's hearing and following, hearing and obeying. And so they've accepted it, their lives are fruitful. He says, the weeds are the people who belong to the evil one. Who's the enemy? Verse 39, the enemy who planted the weeds among the wheat is the devil. He says, we have a real enemy. And then he says, the harvest is the end of the world. And if I could make this little nuance here, the harvest is the end of the world, or the harvest could be considered the end of your world, my world. Because at some point, my time growing in if the world is the field, my time in this world will come to an end. And if someone lives long enough to see the end of everything, then that will be the ultimate harvest. But whether I have a harvest before that date or live to see that, ultimately, there's a harvest day. There's an end date for us all. And then he says the harvesters are the angels. Jesus goes on to explain the parable further in verse 40. He says, just as the weeds are sorted out from the wheat and they're burned in the fire in that story, he says, so it will be at the end of the world. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will remove from his kingdom everything that causes sin and all who do evil. Everything refers to things that are, you know, represented by the weeds. The weeds could be things that are bad or all who do evil, evil, evil people. It says in verse 42, and the angels will throw them into the fiery furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I know that when we read a verse like that there are sometimes some of us, and that causes some anxiety. It causes anxiety because we're like, oh no, that sounds like so judgment. Am I going to be in trouble? And the reason we read those verses and we get fearful is either one of two reasons. One, because we heard a version of God presented to us at some point that God is very hard to please and easy to offend and we're probably in trouble. That's what you heard. Or we're just fearful by nature. And we'll say, oh no, that concerns me. What if that's me? You're not going to accidentally be in this category. Here's what I want you to understand. God is love. God is not the narcissist running around, upset at everybody, looking for a loophole by which to fry you, waiting for you to get the combination just wrong so you can say, aha, I got a reason to zap you. If that's the view you've been handed of God, it's a poor view. He's the opposite. He's love. He sent his son to be our savior, to bring all of us to him at his great personal expense. That's how important it was to him. He loves us. He loves you and loves me. But you say, well, what's he talking about? Well, we know what he's talking about. All of us here today, can we agree about something? All of us here today see things in this world that bother us. I mean, messed up injustices in this world. Now, different things might trigger you in your sense of justice than me, or they might bother us both, but some bothers you more than me. But there are things in this world that just, we're like, what's wrong with that person? Or what's wrong with people that do those things? There's just bad stuff in the world today. You got human trafficking, murderers, thieves who steal everything in someone's livelihood digitally now. They can steal things, people's lives so digitally, ruin people's lives. People get power so they can use it to abuse others and control. All of us, we can go on. I can even name all the things that you and I might be upset by and say, how does that stuff go on in this world? How are there monsters out there? How are there things? Why doesn't God do something? And if we're not careful, we get frustrated at God both directions. Like, God expects things from me. Is he mean? And also, is God too lenient to let people get away with stuff? And either way, we're missing the heart of God, who loves us enough not to be down your throat that way, but loves you enough and loves others enough to be patient. And he says, look, I know there's things in the world that bother you, but the point of this parable is there will come a day when God will deal with that stuff. There will come a day when God will make those things right. There will come a day when God fixes the injustices, when God addresses the problems, when God deals with the things that we wish he would deal with sooner. And we get upset with him for not dealing with sooner. But he says, wait, that day is coming. And then he says in verse 43, then the righteous will shine like the sun in their Father's kingdom. Anyone with ears to hear should listen and understand. Now, that's the parable. Jesus told us a whole parable about a farmer in a field he cared about and an enemy who put a bunch of weeds in the field and some workers who were upset by what should not be in that field and the farmer calming them down and saying, we'll deal with it someday. Jesus took that parable, he applied it to the story of God's macro view of his kingdom and the world and eternity. And we can stop right there and go home a lot sooner than we're going to if we stopped there. But lucky for you, I got a lot to say. Yay. But what I want to do is I want us to take that parable, I want us to nuance it down to our lives. I want us to nuance this down to where you and I live, because here's why. If we're not careful, the Bible just becomes this ethereal book that these big concepts, and we forget how to let it live through us. We are the workers in the story. And all of us have to live this out in our daily lives. We got to learn what the farmer was saying to his workers about the field. And so I want to talk for a while in a very practical way about what this looks like. Are you ready? Let me begin by saying this. We all have fields that we care about. In fact, most of us have several fields that we care about, don't we? Something that we value, that we put a lot of effort and time into, that we want to see grow up healthy and do a good crop and a good harvest. We have a lot of fields we care about. Someone, do me a favor, name a field that you, what's a field that maybe we care about? Football field. I'm going to skip that one today. That's good though, I like it. Football field. What's that? Your family. That's right. Michelle and I got married, started with my marriage. When I got married to Michelle, we wanted to cultivate a good relationship. We wanted to grow into something beautiful and have a great harvest that we'd enjoy decades later more than we did even at the start. And fortunately for her, I'm awesome. So it's been, I don't understand why there's laughter at something like that. When I speak truth, there ought to only be amens. It really hurts me. But anyhow, then we had children. We had kids. And you know what we wanted? We wanted so bad for our kids to have a good field in which to grow, right? We wanted them to be able to grow up and just be the best. We want to pour into them. We wanted them to grow up to be a wonderful crop and a great harvest, right? That's a good field. Thank you. Name another field we might have. Anybody else? Stop your sports. Your job? There's a good one, a job. Your job, whether you're the worker or whether you're the boss or whether you're the owner, you want that place to thrive. You want the harvest to be good, money speaking wise. If you have people that work with you, hopefully if you've got a company and you care about your people more than just your product, you want it to be a good place for everybody. Everyone thrives. We wanted a good harvest there. What's another field? What? Your health? Yes, exactly. That's funny. I came up both services at the same time. In fact, last service I asked the same questions and the same three came up in the same order. We didn't get baseball or football field last service, though. What else? Okay, that's a good one. And they come back to that one in a minute here. How about your friend circles, your social circles, social media circles? We want those fields to be healthy, right? We want our friend groups to be healthy. How about your country? We all want our nation to be healthy and thriving, having an abundant harvest and prospering, don't we? You live here, your community, and then we mentioned just now our healthy church. We want to create a healthy church environment where the soil's good and people grow and thrive and rise up, and we want it to be a healthy culture of the great harvest. Those are fields, and there are many more fields. Those are just a few to get us started, okay? We all have fields we care about. We want them to flourish, healthy cultures, primed for growth, yada, yada. Now, we become concerned when we see things growing that might stunt that growth. Let's call it the weeds. When we see weeds in our field, it concerns us. Now, we're like, that's not good. That shouldn't be there. How'd that get there? And like the story earlier, we don't see them until they've been there for a while. Things are usually under the surface. I know some of us think we're really good at spotting things quickly, but most of the time, by the time we notice a problem in one of our fields, there's been something under the surface for a while going on. And so, there's the bad practices that might show up in our fields. Some people that we think might be bad people. I'm going to get the side mic over here. I'm just going to give up on this for now. We good? All right. Our reaction, listen carefully, our reaction to what we perceive as weeds in our field, our reaction can do more damage than the problem that we are trying to address. That was what the parable taught us. That we don't go out there and rip up some weeds, but he says, no, you're going to uproot the weed. So our reaction can cause more damage than the problem that we're trying to fix. I've said for years, and some of you have heard me say it over and over, it's not our circumstances that destroy us, it's our reaction to them. And so our reaction can do more damage than the problem we're trying to address. Does that mean that we should never address weeds? Or does that mean that we should let things go, or criminal, or illegal, or bad stuff around us? No, listen, let me make something clear. Every analogy breaks down stretched too far. And the Bible tells us, and scriptures teach us, ways to deal with problems that need to be dealt with. There's a right way, but usually the people amongst us who don't like to be patient and deal with problems, who want to just jump in and tear out weeds, we don't want to deal with them the right way either, which is the whole point. And so, the point of this parable, and one that gets so overlooked so often, Jesus is teaching that often more wheat gets hurt by weed removal than by weed presence. That was the whole parable. Let's get those weeds out of here. Yeah, you're going to damage the wheat. But the weeds aren't good for the wheat. No, but neither is upheavaling them.
More wheat gets hurt by weed removal than by weed presence. We feel like sometimes we believe that, but here's the truth. Just because there are weeds that are present does not mean that the wheat won't grow or can't grow. But how we deal with the weeds can cause a lot of damage. And removing them can uproot the wheat as well. And so that's the point of today's story. Now let me just say a few things before I give you some more screen statements. When I see people react to what they perceive to be weeds in their lives, sometimes our response to quote-unquote weeds, sometimes our response is done out of anger. It's like the people in the story. Who put that there? An enemy. I'm going to get that out of here. It bothers me. I can't stand things that shouldn't. That's not right, you know. Anger. But sometimes our response towards what we think are weeds, our response is fear. We're afraid. We're afraid that the weeds might do some harm if we let them go. Let's be real. We're afraid. What would the workers be afraid of? They'd be afraid that the weeds are taking up soil where wheat could be growing, so the harvest won't have as much wheat because of the weeds. Or they're afraid that maybe the weeds are eating nutrients from the soil and the wheat that does grow won't grow quite as strong, and that's a problem. And so the answer must be get rid of the weeds. And he says, be careful. That sounds good until you damage the wheat trying to fix the problem. But sometimes it's done from anger and sometimes from fear. And you know, can I be honest with you? Fear is a more sympathetic reason. We're like, I'm just concerned. I'm afraid this will hurt my field. I'm afraid this will hurt my family. I'm afraid this will hurt my nation. I'm afraid those things, if I don't address those problems, it's going to hurt our community. I'm afraid if I don't address this thing, it's going to hurt. We got to deal with churches that are doing this wrong and people who are leading that way. We have so many things that we think are weedy that we want to address, maybe from anger. And I see a lot of anger. A lot of people out there ranting about the things and dealing with things that makes them mad. And others who are not angry, they're just afraid. Here's the problem with that. Whether anger or fear, does it really matter if the outcome's the same? Those workers could go out in that field and rip up those weeds out of anger, and others can go do it out of just concern for the wheat. It doesn't matter what their emotions were, the damage is done. The outcome is the same. And by the way, to the things that we uproot, anger and fear are hard to tell apart. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've watched someone say, that person is so angry. I grew up with an angry parent, or I saw an angry boss, or I saw an angry Christians, or I saw an angry person. And you're like, and they'd be like, what? No, I was not. I was just concerned and just looking out for things. But it doesn't matter what we thought, because on the other end, it looks the same sometimes. And if the uprooting happens either way, the damage is done. Does it matter what the motives were? Even if one's more sympathetic than the other. And oftentimes, and look, let's be real, we're human. We have control issues, don't we? We want to control our field. We want our field, whatever that is. We mentioned several fields. We want them just to be the way we want them to be. And if they're not the way we want them to be, we got to do something about that. We like to control. But sometimes our attempt to control our field can stifle it. And that's not good. It's not a very popular parable because of these points. So I want to give you a question that you and I need to learn to ask whenever we are bothered by what we perceive to be a weed in our field that we want to get rid of and address and blow up, right? A question to ask when you're bothered or when you're upset or angry or scared is this: what might get uprooted if I respond that way? What might get uprooted that I don't mean to uproot if I respond that way? That's usually not our first question is, how fast can I get rid of this in the most fulfilling and satisfying way? And the better question is, what might get uprooted if I respond that way? That's called collateral damage. Someone tell me, what's the collateral damage in Jesus' story when the weeds got removed? He says, should we go pull the weeds? No. What would have been the collateral damage? The wheat, the harvest, perfect. The wheat, the harvest. Here's what it is. You know what the collateral damage is when people go out there and whether it's anger or fear, start pulling out weeds in their field? You know what the collateral damage is? It's the young wheat sometimes. The young wheat, let's apply that to two areas. In the Christian world, it could be young or new Christians or believers. In our family, it could be our children. We go out there and start, you know, ripping things up, and it's like, whoa, I can't handle that. And there's damage done that shows up immediately or later. The young wheat. You know what else gets uprooted? The old, tired wheat. The old, tired wheat is like, ah, great, another weed crusade. I just can't do another one of these. You know what gets damaged when we're on a weed crusade? You know what gets uprooted? What kind of wheat? The young wheat, the old, tired wheat. How about this? The nearby wheat. You're like, oh, I know that some of the weeds in the wheat are nearby, but I'm real careful. I get my fingers in there and just pulling out the weeds. Hold on now. They're close by, but what about under the soil? How intertwined are things? We rip something out and something else is like, well, I feel an attachment to that. Or I felt that was personal to me. Well, it wasn't meant to be personal to you, but it felt personal to me. Sometimes we try and deal with problems, and there are people that we're raising in our home or raising in our community of faith or seeing our nation. They're going to get to the right place. They're going to figure it out. They're going to have some things around them that you don't like or that we don't like. They can figure it out over time through our love and example and patience. They'll get there. But what happens to us is we go blazing in sometimes to control the field and pull some things out that feel like an identity. They're like, well, hold on now. I'm not sure where I'm at in this deal. It feels like if that's not welcome, then I'm not welcome. If that's not wise, then I'm not okay. Or if that's how you feel, then I don't know if I want to be a part of that. Nearby wheat. Young wheat, old tired wheat, nearby wheat. You know what else gets in trouble? Misidentified wheat. I know all of us think we're really good at knowing what needs to go, what needs to stay, because we're really good. But we get it wrong sometimes. I got a story I told earlier, telling on myself, about real gardens. Not gardens, grass. How many of you, let me ask this question. How many of you love to cut the grass? Be honest. You love cutting grass. Okay, a few weirdos. That's good. How many of you hate cutting the grass? You hate mowing the lawn? Be honest. Anybody else here? Come on. Okay, a couple of my family, of course. Okay, good. A few of us. Okay, when I was a young teenager, my dad is like, son, you're gonna start cutting the grass. Okay. And I went out there on a mission, get this job done as fast as possible and get back to something worthwhile. And I mean, if there was weeds growing over there, I'm not gonna pull them out by hand. I'm not gonna get a weed whacker. If I can get it mowed over, I'll just mow it over. And I walk fast, I can mow fast. I'm gonna be done in no time. And I cleaned up that yard real nice. That night I was in the house and my dad came and said, son, what'd you do? I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, your poor mom. You mowed down her rhubarb. She was growing rhubarb out there. You mowed it right down. I don't know. I just was trying to get it as close. I was trying to get a nice, clean yard all cut down, beautiful. I thought I was doing the world a favor. You're like, Arlen, you're an idiot. I agree. I acknowledge that, okay? But here's the point I'm trying to make. Some of us, that's how we are with our lives. We are so sure that we're mowing down what needs to be mowed down. We're so sure we're doing the best thing. We're addressing what we think needs to be addressed with the passion we want to do. And we never stop to wonder what is being misidentified. And we yank up things that should not have been yanked up. And we deal with problems that weren't really problems. We just weren't understanding of the real scenario and what could be. The collateral damage of the weed removal is sometimes the wheat. You see, the welfare and the potential of the wheat that could grow, it should matter to us all, right? After all, isn't that why we have the field in the first place? Why do we have the field? Why does the farmer have the field? Is it to have a pretty field? Look at my beautiful field. I have the cleanest field. No one's got a cleaner field than me, trust me. It's the cleanest field in the world, right? Is that why we have the field in the first place? Because it looks so good? Because, by the way, I think that's why some people rip things out of their fields. Is because we're so prideful, we want no one to drive by and say, I see some weeds in your field. And so our image causes us to yank things out. But what if it harms the wheat? What about the collateral damage? We say, well, that's not why I do it. I do it because I want those weeds are bad for the wheat. Maybe they are. But what if the removal is also harmful? What if the way we respond is harmful? Isn't the wheat the point of the field in the first place? Isn't it all about harvest? The wheat is the point. In other words, I'd rather let the weeds live than watch the wheat die. Now, that bothers some of us who really hate weeds. And I'm not saying you can't deal with some things. Here's the point. We want to thread this needle where we get it all perfect. We get all of it figured out just right. Deal with everything the right way. But if I'm going to err, and we all do, if I'm going to err somewhere, I'd rather err to the side of letting some weeds live than killing wheat to have less weeds. If you're going to get it wrong somewhere, I'd rather let the weeds live than watch the wheat die. Isn't that how we're supposed to view the world? Isn't that justice? Doesn't justice say it's better to let 10 guilty people go free than to condemn one innocent person? We don't like that, do we? But that's right. And in our lives, I'd rather let the weeds live than fix that problem and watch wheat die, because the wheat's the point. But we're afraid. Some of you say, like Arlen, I love the analogy. I don't really know this parable. Maybe there's a reason. My pushback is I'm afraid that if I let these weeds stick around, they will grow and spread. Yep. That's what the farmer said. But if we forcefully remove it, the wheat will suffer because of it. So warning of our parable is this. We can forget what matters when we get fixated on what we think is wrong in our field. Whatever our field might be, we mentioned several. We get fixated on what we think is wrong, we lose sight of what matters. When the weeds and their removal become our driving force, then the purpose of growing a great harvest of wheat can fade in our minds. And we wouldn't admit that. We're doing it for them, but the damage is done. And oftentimes we justify or excuse our behaviors as, I'm doing what's best for the wheat. Are we? Or is that how we excuse our hatred for the weeds? We defend our intentions. I'm not angry, I'm just concerned. Does it matter? If the wheat gets upheaval, does it really matter what our motives were? Or, here's the one I've been around too long. I'm an old man now. I've seen this too many times. We blame the wheat for being uprooted. Someone says, man, you did some damage there. You got rid of some, well, those things, weeds needed to go. You ripped up some wheat. What? That was not what I was trying to do. Well, the wheat shouldn't be so fragile. Should have better roots than that. That's not, I can't control that. You know, we just dismiss. Instead of being concerned, we blame. At the heart of this wonderful parable that I think gets way too little press is a principle, a great virtue called patience. Patience is a big word. Some of us will say, well, I'm not a patient person. Let me just say something. If your answer is, I'm not a patient person, first thing, that's not a brag. It shouldn't be. Nor should that be an excuse to say I'm going to keep behaving badly because I'm just not that way. You know, just try that. Try to go home to your wife. I'm not a moral person. I'm not a faithful husband. That's just how I am. You know, I just don't do that. Patience is something we need to learn. And the problem is that even those of us who are patient aren't super patient. In the story, the workers are like, farmer, should we go out and get those weeds? They shouldn't be there. Yeah, I know. That's a bummer, isn't it? Yeah, it's a bummer. Can we get? No, leave them. Till when? Till the harvest. The harvest? That's like in forever from now. Yeah. Jesus says, his analogy was, wait till the end of the world. God will fix it. I can't wait that long. Here's the point. Not that we shouldn't address things that need to be addressed. The point is that most of us are less patient than God with things that upset us. And we're more quick to jump in and do something brashly than our Savior who is long-suffering. Patience is a virtue that is born out of wisdom. The older we get, we should gain wisdom, but we don't always. Wisdom should teach us to be patient. Watching enough people get hurt by impatience ought to teach us to become patient. Watching us be wanting quick results and things the way we want them to be right now ought to teach us the damage comes from that. Life ought to teach us patience. But patience is also born out of love. And love is willing to say, I love the wheat more than I hate the weeds. And all of us would agree with that. Every farmer, of course I do. Every one of us, of course I love the wheat more than I hate the weeds. Here's the question to ask yourselves. Are you ready for it? Would the people who know you best say about you that you love the wheat more than you hate the weeds? Would the people in your family say that? Would the people in your community say that? Would the people at your job say that? Would the people in your nation say that? The people in your, the other Christians you know, would people who know you best say, oh yeah, or they say, I'm pretty sure they hate the weeds more than anything. That's what they're always going on about. That's what they're always upset about, all the weeds. That perception is reality. I love the wheat more than I hate the weeds. It's almost like we could say that for far too long, Christians have been known for what they're against, instead of being known for what we're for. I love the wheat more than I hate the weeds. You know who exemplified this story so well? Was Jesus. Jesus himself exemplified this truth. Can I think? Jesus had a lot of people who followed him in his life, in his earthly ministry. Do you know what his most intimate field was? Someone guess with me. What was Jesus' most intimate field? His disciples. Man, you're on fire today, Laura. You're on fire. His disciples. Jesus had 12 disciples closest to him. And guess what? In that field of disciples was a weed. He had a Judas Iscariot in his field. You're like, Arlen, no. Judas Iscariot went bad in the end. You're going to see in a couple weeks here a story where Jesus says, wait, or we'll see it soon. Early in his ministry, Jesus says, I chose 12 disciples and I know that one of them's a devil. Jesus' words, not mine. He knew all along he had a weed in his field. And by the way, it showed up. Did you know there was that Judas was a thief? He had the money purse. And he was a thief. I mean, let's be honest. I don't understand that. I would fire that employee. Right? Jesus let Judas be there. It's a problem. Not only that. This will bother you. Judas, there's a story. We're going to see it in months from now. There's a story where Judas gets upset at something that Jesus does. Probably not three of us know the story fully. He gets mad at something that Jesus does. And if you read the other gospels, Judas gets all the other disciples upset with him at Jesus. And now they're all mad at Jesus thanks to Judas. And Jesus has got to stop what he's doing and address their issue. And that's where we say, see, that's why you can't let a Judas be in your bunch. Because they cause trouble. Should have pulled that weed a long time ago. You're like, well, Arlen, that's different. That was Jesus, and Judas was part of God's sovereign plan to get him betrayed so he could go to the cross and die for our sins. And so that's why that was different than the weeds in my field. Number one, God could have gotten to the cross without having Judas and his little field of disciples. Didn't need that. Number two, are you admitting with me, are we admitting that God's sovereign plan might include having weeds in a field that we don't like, and he can still accomplish his purposes? Does that apply to your field as well? And maybe, just maybe, in an attempt to control that, we rip things out that God is working through because we don't like it. And we do more damage than good. I love the wheat. I think Jesus was a walking example of loving the wheat more than he hated the weeds. I know there's a cliche that we love when we're angry. I've seen people get upset before about something in the world that they don't like. They're like, just kill them all and let God sort it out. That's my motto. Okay, that works. You know what? The Jesus way is this. Love and serve them all and let God sort it out. It was in Jesus' upper room right before he was arrested and betrayed by Judas that Jesus sat there, his last meal the night he would be betrayed. He got in that room. Before they ate dinner, he got on his knees and he washed the feet of every one of his disciples. including Judas Iscariot. Because he was teaching them to love and to serve all who God brings our way. And there's some things that will be dealt with in time. But that's hard. It's hard to be that patient. So here's what I want you to do. I want you and me, and I'm going to wrap this up here. I want you and me to be like the workers of that story. And I don't mean that we're, like, I am like the workers of that story. I'm angry. I want to go get those weeds out of there. Good. I want you to be like the workers of the story. And before you do anything in your fields, first go to the farmer like they did and say, we see some things that bother us in the field. What do you want us to do? Pray that prayer first. And he might just, I'm warning you, have a little bit more of a patient approach than you and I tend to have. But God's good like that. Because he wants everything to grow that can grow. And the rest will be figured out in his time.